Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I am your host, Doug Wortham, and today we're going to check in with the Armed Forces Service Center and learn about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Tribal Veteran Service Officer Initiative. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
In 1914, a Blackfoot Indian named Red Fox James rode horseback across the country seeking approval for a day to honor American Indians. On December 14, 1915, he presented endorsements from 24 state governments at the White House. But despite his best efforts, a national day was never proclaimed. That changed in 1990 when President George H.W. Bush proclaimed November as National American Indian Heritage Month. Every year since 1994, Americans celebrate what is now known as Native American Heritage Month. As we recognize their vibrant culture, we must also remember the painful history they've endured. Despite centuries of forced assimilation and injustice, Native Americans held on to their traditions and languages. That kind of perseverance proved vital in World War II when Native American code talkers helped turn the tides of battle by providing rapid and undecipherable communications. On behalf of the Minnesota National Guard, please join me in celebrating and remembering the invaluable contributions of Native Americans throughout the history of our nation.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me in the studio from the Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport's Armed Forces Service Center is Rick Dale and Patty Carr. Rick is the president of the Armed Forces Service Center, and Patty is on the Board of Trustees. Rick, Patty, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank you very much, Doug.
Good to have you. Now, Rick, we've had you on the show before, so I'm just going to ignore you for a minute and go right to Patty. This is Patty's first time on the show, and Patty, you're the daughter of a Korean War veteran, which is awesome, but you've got two sons, and one of them served in Iraq a little bit, so tell us about his service.
That's right, he did. He was with the 10th Mountain out of upstate New York and was deployed to Iraq between August of 2006 and October of 2007.
And you were telling me before the show that it was because of your son's service when he was deployed, you were kind of freaking out a little bit and you needed to find something to do to try to stay a little bit connected. And that's how you ended up linking up with the Armed Forces Services Center. Of course, it didn't hurt at all because you actually were a Delta employee at the time as well.
I was. I retired a few years back from Northwest and Delta, so I was familiar with the center. I was familiar with the things, the services that they provided, and I thought it would be a good outlet or a good way for me to get some information on what my kid was doing.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes too much information is kind of a concern as well, isn't
it? Sometimes too much information.
Yeah.
But it was a good connection with other military parents and with volunteers who themselves were service members. And so it was a good place for me to put that all together.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would imagine that you're surrounded by a bunch of people that understand or are currently experiencing the same thing you are, because maybe their child is deployed or has deployed, and that had to really, I would imagine, set your heart or your mind at ease and give you a little bit more faith in the system, maybe.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was a good spot for me to land.
Yeah. So now, Rick, you're the president over there, and I thought maybe we'd come to you and let you tell us a little bit about the history of the Armed Forces Services Center. And, you know, one of the things we've talked about on the show before is the differentiation between your center and a USO. And so maybe you can kind of tell us the history and what that difference is and why you're not a USO.
Thanks, Doug. And I think to start, I'll just let your audience know that the Armed Forces Service Center is essentially a secure lounge inside of Terminal 1, basically at the very top end or the start of the A concourse, a secure lounge for traveling members of the military that might be coming through MSP to They may be starting their destination here if they're Minnesota residents, or an awful lot of our guests are service members that are going from point A to point B, and Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport just happens to be a stop along the way. So a secure lounge, very similar to what a USO would be, and if folks are familiar with that in other parts of the country, but we're not affiliated with the USO. We're one of a small number of independent service centers. This week actually marks our 54th anniversary. The service center originally opened November 22nd, 1970, and somewhat of a story that every time I tell it, I'm impressed by what happened. A young man, Scott Purnham from Minnesota, died in a plane crash in Vietnam in the spring or late winter or spring of 1970. His mother decided that she wanted to provide a lounge at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. And over the course of 6 months, and that's the part that really strikes me, is in as few as 6 months, she was able to do the fundraising and get the approvals needed from the Metropolitan Airport Commission Board at the time, and opened the center on November 22nd, 1970. And from that date until just when the pandemic started, the center had been open basically 49 and a half years, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And she pulled that off in 6 months.
Yeah, that is unbelievable.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
We unfortunately had to shut down in March of 2020 due to the pandemic.
Yep.
DOD had basically shut down travel for a period of time, so there's no reason for us to be open. We reopened 6 months later, basically in November of 2020. But because we'd lost a number of volunteers over that 6 month period due to the pandemic, we're now operating 16 hours a day, but it's still 7 days a week, 16 hours a day. Very much would like to get back to 24/7. But that takes a lot of volunteers.
Yeah.
And there's a special group of volunteers that we had for those 49 and a half years. And those were the folks that were willing to work midnight to 4 a.m. or 4 a.m. to 8 a.m.
A hard shift to fill nowadays.
That's a hard shift to fill. And now that we're out on the A concourse, some of the, like the tram on the C concourse, that would be the way you'd get out there if you didn't want to walk. The tram shuts down at 11 o'clock in the evening and doesn't reopen until about 5 in the morning. So those volunteers working the, you know, getting off at 4 a.m. or coming in at 4 a.m. have got to walk the C concourse to get in and out. So
I suppose it'd be a little bit too much to have some Segways or something waiting there for them, huh? You know, get back and forth.
We've tinkered with all kinds of ideas. I'm not sure the Segways have come up, but we've tinkered with a number of ideas on how to do that. So we'd very much like to get back to 24/7. But again, we need to build up the volunteer force back to where it was in 2019.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about volunteers, and we'll direct people to your website. But I wanted to just bring up the fact that, one, you are a Air Force veteran, so thank you for your service. And is that your service, is that what brought you to the Armed Forces Services Center? How did you get connected with the Armed Forces Services Center?
So I'm also part of another nonprofit organization, and through that organization, we raise funds for various groups like the Armed Forces Service Center, Yellow Ribbon Groups, Honor Flight. A friend of mine at the time was involved in the Armed Forces Service Center, asked me for a donation for furniture from that group, and I came out one day to do a check presentation to the old center, and about 2 weeks later, I filled out a volunteer application form, and that's how I got involved. And at the time, and today, our youngest son is just past 18 years in the Marine Corps.
That's awesome.
And so it's more his service. He's been around the world a couple of times, so it's because of his service that I've decided to do this. And I've told folks at the Armed Forces Service Center and my other nonprofit that when he retires, I'm likely retiring.
And your son's a first sergeant in the Marine Corps, I understand.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, well, thank him for his service as well. We do appreciate that. And so we just have a couple of minutes left here, actually just over a minute. And I'm just wondering, Patty, if you might be able to share with us, is there some memorable moment, something that just sticks out in your mind over the last X number of years that you've been involved in the center?
There's a number of them, quite honestly, but we provide all sorts of services. And just a week ago, during one of my shifts, we had a young man who was on his way to basic training whose flight got canceled. And so he was going to wind up misconnecting and get to basic training late. So helping to alleviate his concerns and make the right phone calls and get everything done so that his career got off to a good start was
so you got to use some of your Delta experience to help him get that squared away. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So this is where we'll take a quick break. Then we'll come back. We'll make sure we share the website with everybody. We'll talk about some of the volunteer opportunities and other services that you provide. We'll do that when we come back. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham, and in the studio with me, I've got Rick Dale and Patty Carr, both from the Armed Forces Service Center. And Rick, in the last segment, we were talking about, of course, your need for volunteers, your desire to get back to 24/7. You are open 7 days a week, but you're limited to 16 hours, and a lot of that problem, of course, is because of the volunteers. So how about if we spend a little bit of time talking about volunteers? Tell us how people can find out more information, but more importantly, tell us what you're looking for in a volunteer.
So I'll talk a little bit about what the duties of a volunteer are, and then that'll help me kind of build up to what we're looking for.
Yeah, perfect.
Essentially, what we would ask new volunteers to plan on is 2 4-hour shifts a month in the center.
Okay.
Now, if you're in the center for 4 hours, you're probably at the airport for 4 hours and 45 minutes if you calculate in parking and then getting through security. Because we are on the secure side of the airport, they do have to go through TSA screening. But all badged, like all badged employees, they go through an employee access line, so it's much more streamlined than going through a typical passenger line, particularly on a really busy travel day like we're going to have here coming up in the next week.
Yeah.
Once on the shift, what we ask volunteers, what we expect volunteers to do, the lounge itself is secure, so when a potential guest comes to the front door, we greet them at the door, and then we check that they've got the proper credentials to come into the center. Access to the center is restricted to active duty service members and military retirees and their dependents.
Okay.
We do expect at least one person in the party to have a valid, current, up-to-date DOD identification card. So we check that at the door, and then we welcome folks into the center. We have them sign into our login book. We have a secure lounge that they can relax in, recliners and couches with televisions, charging stations for their mobile devices, whatever. We'll have departure and arrival panels so they can keep track of their flights. We have a kitchen and a menu of about a dozen items, some hot. Hot pocket sandwiches, Jimmy Dean's sandwiches, Brugger's bagels, which is right downstairs from us, donates bagels to us every week. So we have bagels we can toast up, a variety of cereals, other kinds of food snacks, and beverages in the center.
Because we know our military members are always hungry.
Well, and since everything in the center is free, that's a pretty good bargain when you're traveling through through the airport.
Doubt. Yeah, especially if you're traveling with your family, my goodness. Yeah.
And we also have a men's bunk room and a women's bunk room. That on the men's side, we can sleep. We've got bunks for 30 male service members traveling, 10 on the women's side. We have cribs on both sides, three restrooms, and we have a shower facility we just reopened since the pandemic. There is a small child's playroom, kind of like what you'd see at a McDonald's or other fast food restaurants, that if they've got little ones running around traveling with them, which we're going to have now coming up this coming week and then when we get into late December. the volunteers essentially are there to greet people at the door, make sure that they've got what they need in the lounge area, and then do anything that might happen, you know, take place in the kitchen.
So you don't have the travelers or the veterans or the military members. You're not saying go in and just help yourself make a sandwich. You're like, no, let our volunteers take care of this for you. You just relax and this is what we want to do.
Hennepin County Health Department would not like it if we opened the kitchen up to our traveling
guests. Okay, well, there's
guests.
Another issue I guess we should consider.
Yeah, and that's our keeping our kitchen open is very important to us.
Yeah. Now, have you found that with the transition, because it's been a few years now from the previous of being before security but now inside that secure area, have you found that more people actually are using the center now? Because I always felt like I liked stopping by when you were before security, but I didn't want to be there for fear of getting through security, you know, and at least if you're on the other side, you're like, okay, I can really stay here until right up to the last minute and get to my gate.
So very much so. And what we didn't see when we were in the old center very often were those people, those service members, which was a big number that are traveling through MSB,
yeah,
again,
connecting.
Point A to point B, they weren't going to come out to go to the service center and then for
go
the fear
in.
Of having to go back through.
Yeah.
Been a significant uptick. We're well over a million guests over the history of the center, and that number increases more so now than it did when we were outside, because we're much easier, even though we're on the A concourse, it's much easier for somebody transiting through Minneapolis to stop at the center. And it's not uncommon now, which I seldom saw in the old center, for somebody to come in and spend literally 10 minutes or less in the center.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'd come in and just say, I just wanted to look around.
Yeah.
They might grab a beverage, you know, Coke or Pepsi or Diet Pepsi or a Mountain Dew and a bag of chips or Girl Scout cookies.
Of course, yeah.
And head back out the door. And then there are other times, and a lot of times it seems to me this happens with families, particularly those traveling, say, from the Pacific, from Korea or Japan, coming back to the States, going someplace, and they'll be in the center for 6-8 hours.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times it's mom or dad and four kids.
Yeah. Now, Rick, where would you tell people to go look for more information? If they think, hey, you know what, I think I could do that. Four hours, two times a month, that's not a big deal. Where would you tell them to go?
So the easiest way to access our volunteer portal is going to our website, which is mnafsc.org. And there's a tab there to volunteer. Fill out a short form. It's sent to our volunteer coordinator. You'll get a reply from her within 3 to 5 business days. And then she'll start basically with a training program. Our training program today is 3 Zoom sessions to start. One is an orientation, and then 2 are initial training sessions. And then once folks have been through those 3 Zoom sessions, they'll do 3 in-center training shifts, 4-hour shifts, with one of our trainers. Mm-hmm. We'll get them through security using gate access passes, and then that'll give them a chance to actually experience the center firsthand. Following all of that training, they go through a badging process, so they have to be able to pass a background check, just like any other airport employee,
yeah.
For airport police to issue them a badge. And takes probably a couple of weeks to get that badge the first time. And then we have an online registration system for volunteers to sign up for shifts. And usually you can look out about 3 months to find your shifts, whether you want to work 8 a.m. to noon, noon to 4, 4 to 8, or 8 to, and it's 8 to 10:45.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a shorter shift.
So you get that tram.
Because you've got to catch the tram by 11 before it shuts down.
So we're running out of time here, and I want to get back to Patty real quick. And, you know, Patty, you said that you had started volunteering because of your son's service. You want to keep connected. Well, here we are. We're many years later. Your son is no longer deployed, but you're still there. So what does it mean to you to be able to continue volunteering, and why does it mean so much to you to continue volunteering out there?
Yeah, it's really gratifying to know that you've provided that place for a family who needs a little bit of a break. But on top of the volunteer shifts, there's a couple other things that we're able to do. There's a small subset of volunteers that are troop greeters, and we meet charter flights. We work with MEPS, the recruits.
Yeah.
We work with the local National Guard when you guys are going off to training. And then there are a couple of us who also have the honor of being part of a dignified transfer team, so that we will accompany family members of active duty who've deceased or repatriated remains. Yeah. Well, we accompany them to the aircraft.
Yeah, well, we do appreciate the extra services you provide. I know the focus is the Armed Forces Service Center, but there's so much more you do. And, of course, you know, we don't have time to go into it because we are at the end of this segment. But one more time, Rick, what's the website?
The website, mnafsc.org.
Yeah. Well, Rick, Patty, thank you so much for spending some time with us here on Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate it. And make sure all of you out there, when you're traveling through Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, you stop by, say hi to the volunteers, and thank them for doing the things that they do. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In a moment, we're going to learn about the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Tribal Veterans Service Officer Initiative. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Brad Lindsay.
We are in the season of gratitude, a time when feeling thankful or being willing to show appreciation is often moved to the forefront of our daily activities. Interestingly, gratitude has been proven to improve our health in many ways, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and socially. Some veterans have reported that incorporating a regular gratitude practice into their schedule helps them increase their energy level, decrease occurrences of depression and anxiety, and sleep better. Looking for a way to begin growing your gratitude? You could start a gratitude journal by writing down three things every day that you're thankful for. Say thank you for all gestures of kindness offered to you today. Write a short note, email, or text message to someone who is important to you and let them know how much you appreciate them. Or put a visual reminder where you will see it every day that prompts you to feel grateful. As we move through this season of gratitude, consider asking yourself what small steps you can take to build your gratitude practice and enhance your overall well-being.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Galen Minkle is the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Senior Tribal Veteran Service Officer. Galen's been in the position since 2009. He serves as the serves veterans of the four Dakota tribes. He's a proud member of the Lower Sioux Indian community. Galen, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Doug. It's an honor to do this for the second time, so I must have did something right the first time.
Well, yeah, if you're a returning guest, you probably did something right the first time. And I do want to point out that you are a veteran. You served in the United States Air Force, and you're a retired air traffic controller, a veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom. And so thank you for your service. We appreciate that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that nice comment there, sir.
All right. So, you know, we have the county veteran service officers on the program quite frequently. As a matter of fact, Josh, the MAC VSO president, is going to be on in the next segment as well. But what we don't often have on is our TVSOs, or our tribal veteran service officers. And so I'm just wondering if you might be able to give us a little bit of information about what a TVSO is and what you do and how you serve our veterans.
Yes, Doug. We kind of, for those that aren't familiar with the county veteran service officer, we kind of mirror the same scenario type in our tribal offices. So the Native veterans that live within the Indian communities, they come to their office. Like, as an example, I have an office at Upper Sioux, Lower Sioux, as well as Prairie Island. And when they make contact with me, I come down on the monthly visits, and they can come into the office and meet with myself and learn about the different programs, both on the federal side as well as on the state side. And when I speak about the state, I talk about the programs with the State Soldiers Assistance Program, which is something that I've used quite a bit over the years that I've been serving in this role.
And when we talk about the Tribal Veteran Service Officers, I think it's important for the audience to know that you provide the same service as a county veteran service officer. It's just you've got the different title of tribal versus county, and this is specifically for our tribal community veterans to come in and have someone inside of their community to really provide that support that you might need or they might need.
Yes, that's spot on. And the other thing that I would have to say all of us work within is we have great contact and good rapport with all the county veteran service officers, for that matter. But me so more with the Southwestern District 8. I've worked actually in most of all their counties, assisting back in 2018, 19, and 2020. I was running to different offices and helping out while they were working through retired CVSOs or CVSOs that had moved on to different jobs. So I really got to know a lot of our county as well as MACV. I was actually going down there once a month on Wednesday and serving in that office as well. So I'm real familiar with their programs as well. And in this role as a TVSO, I've been able to actually connect with all of the resources that are available. That a lot of your tribal veteran service veterans aren't aware of those programs. So it's our job as tribal veteran service officers to go out into the field, into the tribes, and let them know exactly what services are available and such forth.
Yeah, and I think that's especially important. We know that generally by population or per capita, that those the tribes have a higher percentage of people that have served. And so we want to make sure we get, bring the awareness of the different benefits and entitlements to the tribe so that they can take advantage of the benefits that they've earned.
Absolutely. Yeah, when I first came in, I got to share this with the listeners, the warriors, the Tichika, that's what we call our warriors, our veterans within the communities. They're not one to reach out and ask for help. So back in, I believe, 2007 timeframe, I believe our director, Ron Quadi, and Jim Miller both met with the tribes of Minnesota, and they felt there was a deep need for it because of your Native veterans weren't coming out into the county veteran service offices and filing claims. So that was a huge step in the right direction to ensure that our tribal veterans are being taken care of. And the numbers proven itself how important that program once it started, and to date how effective it's been.
Yeah, I think that again, extremely important that and it also shows or demonstrates how the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is continuously looking for ways to reach the veterans of Minnesota, because that's a part of the mission statement, right? To provide those services to all of the Minnesota veterans, and of course that includes those that are from our tribal nations.
Absolutely. And they're doing it. And, one of the things I wanted to point out in this interview as well is I was invited actually 2 years ago to attend a Tribal Veteran Service annual meeting with the 11 tribes of Wisconsin. And it was interesting to kind of compare what we're doing, what they're doing. And it's amazing how their program is working, but I can see how our program is working better. So, I like the comparison thing, and it's always good to look out outside of your own state to see how other states are doing it. And I can say the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs they're leading the pack when it comes to the Tribal Veteran Service Program.
Yeah, extremely important. We've only got about a minute left in the segment, and there are some other things I want to get to, but I want to make sure you get an opportunity to share where or how people can connect with you to find out about the services and the benefits that you can support our tribal nation veterans.
Well, of course, the Vet Link, 1-800, the Vet Link is the one good source, but there's so many others. So you go to MBVA into the webpage and go to the contacts and such forth, and you'll find all of us. We also, as we're doing outreach events, we're handing out our Field Apps flyers, and all of our numbers representing all the tribes, their numbers are there, so we can be reached that way as well. Any county veteran service officer, they're all aware of where we're at and who we are. So that's another resource. So there's plenty out there, sir.
All right, 1-888-LINK-VET, and of course, minnesotaveteran.org. So what we'll do, Galen, is we'll take a quick break here. We'll come back. I want to hear a little bit about the powwow you participated in and then other ways that you're supporting the four different Dakota tribes. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham, and on the phone with me, I've got Galen Minkle, and Galen's the Senior Tribal Veteran Service Officer with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And, you know, one of the things we mentioned as we were going to break, Galen, is the powwow that you participated in. And it was a Veterans Day event. I thought maybe you could just share with us a little bit about, you know, what is a powwow? And then really, what's the significance of that event and, of course, your participation in it?
Well, you know, the Dakota people, along with all the other tribes throughout the United States, they do their own powwow in every different way. You know, it's more about our culture. But Attitica, the warriors of the Dakota tribes, we're the first to walk into a powwow with our flags, and we're the last to leave the room at the end of the powwow with our flags when we retreat them. It's about our culture more than anything, but I'd like to share that this one was more unique than in the past. We have what we call a Tribal Veteran Service program that kind of started this. Years ago, where we actually have a Washipi, which is a veterans powwow annually, and it's done at the Dakota Expedition Center here at Jackpot Junction, which is co-located with the Lower Sioux Indian Tribe. And the neat thing about this year, which makes it more unique than ever before, it's the first time I was able to get other tribal veteran service officers to sit at the table during the two-day event and pass information along. But the other thing that was so unique about this powwow was we had the federal VA on the table next to us. So we were all one big team, and that's something that's never been done before. So it was quite interesting to have them there, the feds. And looking back, we started conversating, and here it was Ted Thompson. He worked for the MBVA in the claims office, I believe, for roughly about 10 years. So it was a great powwow. We always put on a feed. We had meals that were provided. It was a two-day event, and I can tell you, it was it's so heartwarming and a great feeling when you can bring out those colors and serve on the Honor Guard with the Lower Sioux Honor Guard.
Yeah, what a great deal, and it's so important, I think, to be able to get all the different entities together, and be one big group willing to support veterans regardless of what branch they served in, when they served, whether they're part of a tribal nation or not. I mean, we all served, we are all veterans, and we should all be treated and taken care of the same, regardless of where it's coming from.
Absolutely. We had one of our elder veterans, she's a Navy veteran, and she also did our groundbreaking blessing when the cemetery was put up here, the new state cemetery just east of Redwood Falls. And we have so much respect for this lady, and she's kind of our medicine woman, to say in different terms, but such high regard for Lydia Conoco. to be a part of all of that. So
yeah, I was at that dedication ceremony. I remember that. So that was really, really neat. And we're running out of time here, Galen, and we have just over a minute. And I'm wondering if you can just tell us four Dakota tribes. Who are or what are the four Dakota tribes? Who are you serving out there?
I'm serving the Shakopee, Mittawakanton, and also the Prairie Island Indian community. That would be down in Welch, Minnesota. Lower Sioux Indian community, where I'm a proud member of, here in Morton, Minnesota. And the Upper Sioux Dakota tribe of Granite Falls, Minnesota.
That's so a pretty big, expansive area.
It is. And I certainly enjoy working with all the tribal entities. And I'm so welcomed in their communities, and that's what makes this job even more rewarding. So.
Well, that's awesome. And Galen, we do appreciate you, what you're doing to serve our veterans, specifically our tribal veterans and, of course, the Dakota tribes. And just appreciate you taking some time to come on Minnesota Military Radio and share a little bit more about what a tribal veteran service officer is.
Well, I thank you for giving me another opportunity to come on the radio program. It's been an honor, and I wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving and a happy new year.
And we'll take a vote here with the production team, and if they think you did a pretty good job, we might invite you back. All right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks again. Yeah, appreciate you, Galen. You take care.
You as well. Thank
all right.
you very much.
Yep. Bye. Joining me on the phone now is the president of the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers and the County Veteran Service Officer up in Lac La Parle County, Josh Benega. Josh, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Always good to be on here, Doug. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. You know, I was just talking to one of your counterparts from up there, Galen Menko, who, as you know, is a tribal veteran service officer. And he really spoke highly about the relationship that the TVSOs have with the CVSOs. And it must be great to hear that kind of a compliment from somebody that's right in your backyard.
Oh, absolutely. Those TVSOs, they do an outstanding job when it comes to, you know, the specific needs of Native American veterans. I'm sure Galen mentioned that Native Americans have the highest percentage of military service amongst them.
Yeah, we actually talked about that. And one of the things I thought was interesting, I mean, we generally don't think about it in this sense, but, you know, he's got four separate Dakota tribes that he's taking care of. And he's going all over the place from, you know, up in your neck of the woods down into Prior Lake and Red Wing. So a big deal. Probably not as big as Lac La Parle County, though, right?
No. As many people know, Lac La Parle is fairly rural, and we got things going pretty well here.
Well, one of the things that you want to make sure we talked about, and I wasn't tracking this, and so I'd love to have you explain it to the listening audience, and that is about some of these updated requirements for entering some of our military installations. Maybe you can just explain that a little bit and tell us what that looks like now.
Yeah, in the past week or so, I've been seeing these articles and press releases from DOD, VA. I've seen an article in the Military Times, military.com, but DOD announces a coordination with VA in enabling easier access for veterans and caregivers, access to military installations for certain MWR programs and or shopping
okay.
availability.
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely important, right? The last thing you want to do is have, you know, a long, arduous process to be able to get on base to you know, actually take advantage of some of the benefits that you have just because of your service.
Yeah, exactly. Eligible veterans, all they have to do is they have to have a VA-issued Veterans Health ID card or have a government identification that's real ID compliant. Like a driver's license sure. or an identification card. And this all started on November 1st of this year.
And that's nationwide
veterans,
now?
Yes, it is.
Oh, yep. Awesome.
To enroll for these reoccurring installation accesses, individuals must visit each installation's visitor center. So, you know, and they have to present an acceptable credential, like a VA health ID card or a real ID compliant driver's license. You know, state of Minnesota has enhanced and real ID, so that works. Undergoing on the spot criminal record, background check, and have eligibility for on-installation benefits verified electronically, which includes commissary, exchange, or authorized MWR services, morale, welfare, and recreation services.
Well, so, that's good, you know, make an update and start making things easier. Josh, got less than a minute, maybe about 45 seconds here. I want to give you an opportunity. Thanksgiving is right around the corner. What kind of message do you have to our veterans, to the citizens of Minnesota as it relates to Thanksgiving?
Well, we're not going to be on in December either, so we'll talk about just the holidays in general. Be safe. Be responsible, and check on your buddies. You know, it's a high time of year for mental health concerns. So, you know, make sure you're checking on your buddies and make sure everybody's being safe and responsible during this holiday season, regardless of what your beliefs are or what you celebrate.
Well, that's awesome, Josh. We appreciate it. Great message. And thanks for all the work you're doing here to take care of our Minnesota veterans.
Yeah, thank you, Doug, for having me on here again.
You bet. And that was Josh Benega. Before we close out today's show, I'd like to say thanks for tuning in to Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate your continued support. We strive to bring you quality content each week and look forward to hearing your feedback and suggestions for future topics and guests. Please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, click on Contact Us to send us your thoughts. Join us next week for a special on-location recording at Mancini's Char House for the Jewish War Veterans Annual Membership Dinner. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a productive week and you find a way to thank and honor those who have and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.